Hello, hello world. Hey there, welcome to the Book Drop Mic, brought to you by Ink Veins, your source for book publicity, promo, and press releases. This is Jason, how are you? Quick reminder that Spartacoda is now available for pre-order on Amazon, and my good friend Kirby Hayborn just delivered to me the audio, and his performance is just ridiculous. It is so good. You're going to love it. Check it out on Amazon. We'll have the links, of course, to all those good things. All right. I'm really curious about today's guest. I've known this particular interview was coming for quite some time. I suspect this will be one of our more listened to episodes of the show. I joke a lot. If you've ever been to an event with me, a signing, a devotional, whatever, you know that I like to joke that I am never the smartest person in the room. If there are only two people in the room, I'm still not the smartest person in the room ever. I'm not sure I'm the smartest person in the room if I'm alone, to be quite honest. But I don't think today's guest can say that, because I suspect there are not many rooms where he is not the brightest. And I mean that as a compliment. His name is Sam Wilkinson, and he is on the show today. How are you, Sam?
Good. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Okay to call you Sam. Do you like Samuel? Do you like Dr. Wilkinson? What do you like?
Sam is just perfect.
Dr. Sam. Anyone call you Dr. Sam? I like that.
Not too often.
No, they should. They should. All right, Sam, your new book, A Purpose, What Evolution and Human Nature Imply About the Meaning of Our Existence, is one of the most interesting nonfiction titles I have seen in a long, long time. And folks, the reviews for this book are off the charts. I'm going to share one that I particularly loved because I love this other author. Here's what he said. An essential book by every measure, beautifully written, superbly researched, and life-changing. You will never think of your life or the earth or the purpose of each in the same way again. That's Greg McKeown, a New York Times bestselling author of Effortless and Essentialism, two books that I absolutely love, two of my actually favorite, maybe nonfiction titles of all time. Do you know Greg, by the way?
Well, he was kind enough to endorse my book. I went on his podcast a couple months ago. Very kind and generous of him to provide that effusive praise, as he did.
Yeah, he's terrific. He is. Those two books are just fabulous. I have recommended those books often. All right, before we dive into your title, tell us a little bit about you, your background, and why this book right now.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I am an academic. I'm an associate professor at the Yale School of Medicine. Lived up here in Connecticut and been here for 12 years, coming up on 12 years with my family. I've wanted to write this book for some time. It's been almost 15 years since I made a fairly, it was almost a singular type decision. I'm going to write this book about this particular topic. And it stemmed really from kind of a crisis of meaning that I had as a first year medical student. I was fortunate to attend medical school at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. And that first year there were a lot of questions swirling through my head. Some of this had to do with what I would say is perceived conflict between science and the sense that I have, that most of us have, that life has value and meaning and purpose. And after a period of intense reflection and study, I came to a conclusion that I thought was very satisfying personally. And I decided to eventually write a book.
When you say eventually write a book, how long has it been since you said, title page or page one, let's go?
Well, I tried to write a little bit right then and there. I was a first year medical student. This was, it's about 15 years. It was 2009. And at some point I had to put it on the shelf just because medical school is intense. Within a half a year or so, we had our first children who were twins, twins in the midst of medical school and all these other things. So I put it on the shelf for a little over a decade, and I picked it back up again as I had a little bit more flexibility in my time and effort as a faculty, and picked it up really right before COVID. And so there was maybe about 2 or so years, a little more than 2 years during COVID, where I really was intensive in my effort and picking this back up and was able to, you know, conclude this project and, you know, it's coming to launch here in the next couple of weeks, and I'm excited about it.
So I love to put people on the spot with their elevator pitch. You sort of teased this a few minutes ago, but this is a big topic. It's a big book thematically, right? But on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or in Target, when you're walking or browsing or scrolling past books, you've got a few seconds to catch somebody. What do you tell somebody in that quote unquote elevator pitch in 30 seconds or less about the book and why they need it?
Well, for me, it is trying to bring together these two, in some cases, very different worldviews through which we see existence. When we turn to science, questions like what is the purpose of life? You know, where do I find meaning? A lot of times science doesn't have satisfactory explanations. And so a lot of us turn to religion or philosophy to answer these questions. And my goal here is to bring those together and show how not only are they not in conflict, but they are mutually reinforcing.
So you and I were talking before we began taping here today. We both served in some similar leadership positions in our faith, which has put us in a lot of counseling situations one-on-one with church members through the years. In those discussions, how often, obviously without violating anyone's confidentiality, how often did someone sit down and raise some of these questions with you about this balance between, you know, science and faith? And did that impact your writing?
It tends to happen, in my experience, it tends to happen more among young people, particularly those who are in the trenches of a university education. That seems to be when this comes to the forefront, if it does. Not everyone struggles with this. Some people they don't really see that conflict. But, you know, among surveys of, say, young people who have grown up in a religious environment, this is the number one or two thing as to why they are prone to kind of drift away from a religious upbringing. It's kind of a tie between, you know, the perceived conflict of science and faith, as well as a perception that religious leaders or people are acting in ways that are hypocritical, which that's hard to get away from. You know, human nature is full of contradiction, but it's a prominent theme among young people, especially those immersed in a university setting.
So are you hoping that people will, I mean, there must be some part of you that hopes someone picks up the book whose faith is perhaps a little thin right now, and they read through it and they say, you know what, maybe it's worth another shot.
Yes, that I think that is exactly what I would hope. I don't want to be overly optimistic and say, well, I'm going to convert the world with this book. But there's a phrase that I really like from a man named Austin Farrer, who was a contemporary and colleague of C.S. Lewis, who said essentially that argument can't create faith, but the lack of argument can destroy faith. And so, you know, most people's faith it's not grounded in science. A lot of it's grounded in personal, very intimate experiences that people have had. But if they have this onslaught of logical argument that tears that down and they don't have any sort of defense for it, I think that can be a recipe for losing your faith. So I wouldn't say this is an apologetics book, which apologetics is kind of the defense of faith, but in a way it could be framed that. I mostly see this as a science book, and again, in a way that reinforces my conviction that there is a purpose to our existence and a purpose to life, and that one of them is to kind of choose between conflicting desires within us.
Have you had experienced support from your community up there?
A number of my colleagues definitely know that I'm writing this. I don't know the extent to which the book gets into this. So it'll be interesting to see how it is received. I think you know, it's a culture here where it's, there's a lot of respect for different viewpoints. And so I haven't had anyone say, oh, you know, you believe in God, what are you doing at Yale? No, maybe people think that, but no one said that to my face. So, you know, it'll be interesting, especially as we get into the specifics of human nature. That is sometimes where things can get a little bit, you know, interesting, and different perspectives can evoke strong feelings in people with different kind of backgrounds and ideologies.
Well, I want to share this other real quick, this other endorsement that jumped out at me from a name folks might recognize. If you struggle to reconcile faith and reason, Sam Wilkinson's profound book, Purpose, was written for you. You will be left with an understanding of the guiding forces behind human evolution and behavior from Arthur Brooks, just down the road at Harvard. Is that true? Will I be left with an understanding of the guiding forces between human? I mean, that's a testimonial, my friend. That's the big leagues right there. When Brooks says something like that about your debut book, something's happening.
Well, I hope you will. Really, there are, if we want to get into the specifics, there were two kind of key things when I started to write this book, or before I started to write it, that were really bothersome to me about, and when, you know, when we talk about the conflict between science and faith, a lot of what a lot of us mean is the theory of evolution, right? Mm-hmm. It's been controversial basically for the century and a half since it was, you know, formally described by Charles Darwin. And there were two key aspects to it to me that were really kind of bothersome that I now see as kind of an incomplete understanding of it. And when we kind of have a fuller picture, again, can be very much in harmony, if not reinforcing, with this sense that, you know, there's a greater purpose to our existence.
I want to talk a little bit about your agent. Mark is a good friend of mine, Mark Gottlieb. How has it been working with him?
It's been great. He's very responsive, very quick at getting back to me when I have a question or any sort of need. And yeah, he's just been a very, very responsive agent, especially for a first time book author.
Yeah, no, he's great. And he's got that reputation for being really hands-on and great with debuts like this. So, a shout out to Mark at Trident, anyone who's looking to, land that first agent with that first deal. Mark is someone you might want to reach out to and pitch. All right, what's next for you? I know it's hard because this book is, you know, dropped this week, but I mean, you can ask Greg about this with his book. You don't write an only book, right? You write a first book. So what's the second book? What are you working on?
I don't know. So, I'm not a full-time author. Most of my time is spent conducting research. My specialty is in mental health, and I spend quite a bit of time conducting clinical trials to help develop and refine treatments to improve people's depression and so forth. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see how this book goes. If it goes all right, and you know, I don't get canceled, I will probably write another one, probably along the same lines of the mysteries and complexities of human nature are really intriguing to me, and obviously very connected with what I do as a profession. So, I likely will write another one, but I'm still in the pre-planning stages of that.
Well, I'll be excited to see what comes next. And if you're listening and you have ever wondered about this dance between faith and science and religion and history and evolution and human nature and all these things and how they work together, I hope you'll pick this up. And I've said before, I say it all the time, if you don't think you're even going to have time to read the book right now, that's fine. Buy it now anyway. And it's okay if it sits on your shelf for a little while. It's really important to authors, particularly with the first book, that we get out there and support the book opening week with pre-orders or just buying it on the day it drops. Is it's awfully beneficial to an author trying to get a book out there and in bookstores and the algorithms of Amazon. They really promote and tend to kind of lift up books that have some mojo behind them at the very beginning. I hope that folks will give this a look. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you a little bit today. Again, I think there are people in my life with whom I have had significant lengthy conversations about faith, their faith, why it has perhaps waned, and with no judgment from me, I hope ever, some suggestions for them on how they might find it again and perhaps come to peace with this relationship between science and faith. They're going to be getting a copy of this book, Sam. They're going to be getting a copy of this book. I think this is perfectly timed in today's pretty divided and chaotic world. I predict this book is going to become a powerful tool for a lot of folks, and I'm very happy, honored even, to be a part of this this early discussion about this project. Congrats, by the way. It's a big deal, right? It's a big deal, your debut book. I hope you feel good about the accomplishment.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It has been a long road, but it's been a satisfying one.
Awesome. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Book Drop, Mike, brought to you by Ink Veins. Excited. After a little bit of a hiatus, now we've got a whole slew of new books dropping this spring. Excited to get in to the studio and to talk about them. Again, links to all of Sam's good work, the things he's doing, and of course, the link to Amazon in the show notes. All right, that's it, Sam. Thanks. Get back to work, would you?
Thanks.